Hi, and welcome to the Sales Enablement Pro podcast. I am Shauna Simawang. Sales enablement is a constantly evolving space, and we're here to help professionals stay up to date on the latest trends and best practices so they can be more effective in their jobs. Joining us today is Christopher Kingman, the Director of International Enablement for TransUnion. Chris has extensive sales enablement experience in training and mentoring, increasing seller efficiency, and problem solving to increase sales productivity. Chris, in your opinion, what does the optimal sales enablement organizational structure look like? Who and what have you found ideally to report into? And how have you found it ideal to have the team structured?
So I think optimally, it should report into either an operational function or a sales function, either an executive sales leader, so somebody who oversees an entire organization versus a portion of it. That way they can sort of make sure that your activities, your interests represent the entire organization. It's easy to sort of get it skewed, or, you know, if it reports into arbitrarily like marketing. I just don't think it should report into marketing, because it can sort of skew towards representing and enforcing marketing-based initiatives, right? Versus all sales is what we do. Anything in that structure is fine. I just think it needs to be sort of, I guess it would be organizational independent, but a director or higher, depending on the size of your org, right? VPs, et cetera. So I report now into the VP of sales, sales strategy and ops. And so we cover all international sales, period. And so that's sort of a great place to sit, right? That way all of my action is in the name of revenue attainment globally. After that, I think you can, it's up to the organization, but anything that is sales supporting should and can report to enablement. It's up to the organization what does. For example, sales comp, I don't think is a sales enablement function, just don't, but it does at TransUnion, reports up to the corporate sales strategy and operations. I think you don't have a customer service comp person, you just have people that do payroll. So sales comp should just roll into that, in my opinion. Everything else largely can or should report up into sales enablement. The only other thing I would think is customer service, and that's if you have B2B and B2C, or if you service end users in some way. I think that can sit outside, warrants its own thing as well. I've seen it roll up under support, or excuse me, enablement and not, and I don't have a preference. Actually, I do have a preference. I wouldn't want it under my organization, just because I don't want to deal with it. But other than that, I think it's fine. I think it's technology, support, QA, training and development, sales readiness, all of those are core aspects. Everything else is negligible, and I think you can make the argument if it's in the support or development or along the lines of revenue attainment, enablement could have even a dotted line to it.
Interesting. And as you mentioned, you're currently responsible for international enablement. So tell us a little bit about this role and some of the areas that are unique to sales enablement practitioners that actually have a global scope the way you do.
Sure. So my role focuses on aligning both in region. So TransUnion has sort of, we have the umbrella, we have international, we have US, and then we actually have healthcare as a separate one. So my role oversees the international portion. And basically what I do is align both regional and corporate resources to meet both the individual sellers and the global revenue goals. I work with the executive leadership within these regions or countries to identify the roadblocks to revenue attainment, and then I align their resources, corporate or US-based resources, and then we self-source or I build a lot of things to solve these problems. My scope really just spans the entire organization, and frequently the challenges that we see involve me, as I talked about, breaking down these silos, because it's just the norm. It's not even I wouldn't call it a problem, it's the norm. Right? It's what everybody's used to is I work in this little bubble here and Shauna works in this little bubble here, and I don't really need to consult with her because this is my bubble. And that's a lot of my job is just, going in, acting as an internal consultant, learning about all of these challenges and then sort of bringing everybody to the table, bringing best practices or really what works even from any other region or US, or we, you know, design a hybrid model. I would say, you know, what's unique to me, every region has their own instance of Salesforce. So I have to sort of work with that. They have their own billing systems. They have their own sales cycles. They have their own products. So we have a crazy amount of products within every region. So it's sort of understanding markets and trends, and then understanding sort of within each market, all of the pressures. So for example, I'm in the UK. I've been involved in the UK since for about 6-7 months now. GDPR is a massive pressure here. It's impacting everything, every decision we make, every, and not just with customers, but integration, right? So US company buys a UK company. So a lot of, there's a lot of things that we have to be cautious of. And then you have the Brexit, which is just sort of hovering over everything that we do. And so it's, the interesting thing is I go to regions, they all have similar challenges. You know, our pricing's messed up, or our contracts are bad, or our CRM is this, or sellers can't do that. But it's sort of the individual fixes are all unique and bespoke sometimes, but they all draw upon experiences from everywhere else.
That's very cool. You mentioned being kind of an internal consultant. How do you go about, and I recall you speaking about this at Forrester, how do you go about breaking down some of those barriers with the folks that you're working with internally?
So I do have the very businessy approach to it. But when I was in the US, I did the same function. And I really just like to ask two questions to a lot of people. And it's sort of disarming, especially when you go into a country and they don't know you. And you know, or here it's such a recent acquisition that, you know, morale is a little shaky. I like to ask people what sucks about your job, what sucks, you know, about your work, what's impacting you. It's a great way to get a laugh out of somebody. It's very disarming. You know, they're, wait a minute, you know, I certainly don't come in a suit and tie. I mean, I'm wearing a t-shirt right now, but, I like to ask that question because it just takes a weight off of people. They really unload to you, especially if you've asked them that question like 3 times in 6 months, and they know they can, you, they can just, oh, this is so awful. And they just word vomit on you. Here's everything that's wrong, or here's the challenges that I'm facing. And it's great to hear it from one person. But what's really great about asking that question is you consistently will get a lot of the same answers just in different people's voices. And you sort of, you know, you take anecdotal, you take subjective information or qualitative information, you then quantify it and put some scores to it and, you know, prioritize it and rank it. And suddenly you have a list of very real problems that are impacting your business that are really weighing on your people, enough for them to tell you that this is why their job sucks, or I could be so much more successful if this would go away. And it could be, the interesting thing is it could be, you know, just the language, the legalese in a contract is just not, it's not conducive to renegotiating term. You would never think that, you know, if you didn't know any better, you would never think that's a real issue or it's an impactful issue. But then when you dig in and you talk to 2 or 3 people and they're like, for me to get 2 contracts out in a day, I have to take all day to do it. Suddenly that's a very big issue, or suddenly that's a, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? And you go down these rabbit holes with these people, and then you start going to department, you start peeling back the onion. You realize there's some major challenges here. There's some, you know, major issues going on, or there's a, you know, systemic challenge or process or problem that now we have to go prioritize and tackle, and we got to bring in resources. And it's just, it's easier to get to that by just sitting down and talking, you know, person to person than fill out this questionnaire or anything else that, you know, maybe a consulting firm would come in and formally approach you and, you know, ask you a bunch of questions. And the second question I ask is, well, what would make this better? You know, if you had a, I like to say, if you had a magic lamp and you rubbed it and, you know, what would make this better? What would make it go away? People tend to have the answers to the problem. It's just, you know, it gets lost. It always gets lost, and people feel like no one listens to them, or, you know, well, I'm just a sales guy. Nobody cares, you know, what I have to say. And the reality is that your people always have the answers to your challenges. You just have to, you have to get it out of them. You have to make an environment where they're empowered to share that with you, or you know, capable of even sharing it with you, or you know, willing to, or motivated to. And I found just this overly simplistic approach has gotten me to, you know, unearth a lot of the challenges that really impact our business.
Thanks for listening. For more insights, tips, and expertise from sales enablement leaders, visit salesenablement.pro. If there's something you'd like to share or a topic you want to know more about, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.